The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes Show.
It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. You know, in this Christmas season, we like to do something genuinely spectacular. There's evil in the world, and every now and again, we get to partner with CSI, Christian Solidarity International, to combat evil in a way that is palpable, that is absolutely possible. We can free people from slavery. Doesn't seem real, does it? It's real. We in America, anyone who's listening to this program can do something about it. It is a spectacular opportunity. And I wanted my friend Kevin McCullough to tell us more about the opportunity because he knows about this stuff. He's worked with CSI. Kevin, welcome.
Hey, Eric, seems like I'm on your show every day these days.
Why not?
It's good to be back. Hey, it's fun. Let's keep
it's
going.
It's more fun to talk about what great things we can do than about, you know, how difficult everything is in the United States and all our problems. This is something I keep saying. It's like what, you know, the Jews call a mitzvah. You can do a good act. It is just a spectacular thing that you can just do this thing with a certain amount of money. You can do this good thing and there's nothing to say about it. It's just all good and wonderful. And I think when you have that opportunity, you're sort of obliged to take it.
Well, you know, what's funny, Eric, is, you know, you and I live in the New York area and we rub shoulders with people that a lot of times disagree with us on a lot of things from the basis of our faith and worldview. But one thing I've never found any of them willing to criticize for is the involvement that I've had to talk about CSI and tell others about CSI and the releasing people from slavery. And I don't know if this will come through on the camera, but I wanted you to see this picture of a woman named Abouk. I want you to notice something about her face. Eric, what is that right there in the middle of her face?
It looks like pure joy as expressed in a smile, but it's more than a smile. I mean, that's kind of an amazing.
It's one of the most happiest expressions I think that has ever been captured in photography. And for those that are listening, she has this huge smile. And if you knew what this woman had been through prior to taking that picture, you would say that that smile is in fact a miracle, because that woman had no reason to have a smile that big on her face. She's also holding in this same picture a bag that says CSI on it. And people may be wondering, well, what is that bag? Why does it have CSI plastered on it? Well, that is a part of what's called the Sack of Hope that is given to these women that are liberated from slavery. And when they are begun to be relocated back to where their family originated from or where their family is at. And we've never talked about this element of it, Eric, but when you go and retrieve the slave and you bring them to the recovery camp at the border of South Sudan, and then they have some time to recover, then there's this last part of the journey, which is the going back home. But it is unlike any homecoming you've ever seen in your life. You know, this year, Mr. Fauci is saying, don't do Christmas. He's saying no Christmas for you. And we're holding to just the opposite of that. In CSI, we're saying, let's make Christmas big for these slaves. And when they come in, they hold a party like you've never seen. The entire village comes out. There is a huge, enormous gathering of people that come out and they sing hymns. They sing hymns praising God for the return home of this loved one that they had. And it is absolutely unlike anything that has ever been conceived of in this particular slave's heart. Because for the years previous to that, all they have known is heartache. All they have known is indentured labor. All they've known is sexual abuse and verbal abuse and physical abuse. And at the end of the day, to come home, to have people who love you, that sing praises to God because you are free and capable of living your life again. It is that mitzvah that you were talking about. It is unlike any other good that I've ever witnessed. And it makes my heart so full.
I mean, I keep having to step outside myself. You know, you think this can't be real. It's so hard to communicate these things because we live in a country, we are so blessed with freedom. We can't begin to imagine what it would be like to live in a place where slavery is possible. Talking about living in the Iron Age or something, it doesn't seem possible from where we are. And yet right now it's happening. Right now, women like the woman you just showed on camera, and again, this is a radio show, but we also are on YouTube. So go to our YouTube channel, your Taxes Show, and you can see these things. But that photo, it just knocks me back because I think that's a real person.
Yeah.
That is obviously a person who is experiencing a kind of joy that doesn't seem possible in this world because we've never experienced the evil that she's experienced.
Well, and I want
you're able to do something about it.
And I want your listeners to understand something here. You've been in coordination with CSI. There are negotiations underway for 350 slaves, just like Abuk, to be released. And those negotiations are well down the path of ready to be liberated. And I'm thinking, what better Christmas present could you give a human being than to literally give them the gift of life back that they had robbed from them? Many of these women were kidnapped as teenagers or even younger. They have seen the worst dark side of humanity, repetitive rape, female genital mutilation, things that you and I wouldn't even say in front of our daughters, much less ever expect them to occur. And yet that's what the life of these women have endured over and over and over again. When CSI finds them, when they talk to the slave owners and they say, hey, here's a cattle for your vaccine that you desperately need and can't get, just let me have the freedom of this woman in exchange. And then they make that exchange. That's a powerful thing. But then to go back and to be given the sack of hope, which includes everything they need to start their new life, enough grain to feed them for a year, enough seed to plant for future years, fishing tools, micro commerce abilities with a she-goat and the ability to not only produce milk and dairy products, but also to then breed other goats. You've got an opportunity to literally give this woman who's in all likelihood for the past number of years, not had anything of her own, no personal possession, no dignity, no privacy, no ability to even keep her own name. Most of these women are given an Islamic name by the Islamist slave owner. And they are told, if you even repeat your name, if you remember your name, we'll kill you. This is the opportunity to literally give them back everything that their life has had robbed from it. And for only $250.
Kevin, I just thought of two things real quick. First of all, anybody old enough to remember the miniseries Roots in the 70s, we remember that famous moment where Kunta Kinte is insisting that is his African name. And the slave owner is forcing him, doing a horrible thing. I won't even bring it up on the air, but to take your name from you. And these are Christians being told, you are now going to be Muslim. You're never going to be able to say your Christian name. I want to say, by the way, anybody listening, if you want to share your faith with someone, can you imagine if you're able to say to somebody, in your name, I gave enough money to free someone from slavery in Africa? You want to talk about what a witness of the love of Jesus that is to somebody who maybe doesn't know anything about the God of the Bible or thinks Christians are just a bunch of kooks or something. You express your love in that way with your own money and do it in the name of someone. Even if you can't do $250, whatever it is, that says something really important about what it means to be a person of the book, a person of the Bible, a person right, who worships the God that died for us. That's why it's such a wonderful thing to do around Christmas.
Well, and I think that if you ask yourself today, and maybe you're somewhere on the spectrum, maybe you said, well, I can't do 250, but could I give a monthly gift of $25 for the next 10 months? Hey, that would work. You would liberate one human life. But I know that there are a few people, Eric, listening within your listening audience that could do $25,000. and literally liberate a thousand or a hundred slaves. And the joy that you'll get, whether you're on one end of that spectrum or another, by taking the step to do it,
oh my god,
is really undescribable.
I'm gonna give the phone number, folks. You can call right now, 888-253-3522. Go to our website, metaxastalk.com. You'll see the CSI banner, or call 888-253-3522. Thank you, Kevin.
Flows and flows of angel hair.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, on the Eric and Taxes Show, I get to talk about almost anything. But the best part of it for me is that I get to talk to people that I like to talk to. For example, Bishop Harry Jackson. He's the kind of guy that I would like to get on the show. Perhaps sometime in the future we can arrange that. Holy cow, here he is. Pastor Jackson, welcome. Now,
Eric, thank you. It's good to see you.
Do you want me to call, do people call you Bishop or Pastor Harry or whatever? I've known you for years, but I don't even remember what people typically call you.
Well, often they defer to Bishop, but I love it that my mother called me Harry. So out of respect, I something yes. And I think the Lord calls me son, most people just call me Bishop, or friends can call me Harry.
Maybe I'll call you Bishop Hal. No, I won't do that. Now, look, you and I, we were together just a few days ago, so I know all about your new book. And what I love is that, I mean, because I've known you, I know where you're coming from. I know you're someone whose voice and thinking I can trust, because right now we're dealing with some tough, confusing stuff in this country around the issue of race, particularly. And so you have a book out called A Manifesto, Christian America's Contract with Minorities. Now, I just want to say, first of all, that you are the senior pastor of Hope Christian Church in Washington, D.C., and I've seen you at Chuck Colson events. He was my dear friend. And but what is it that led you to write this manifesto? Why do you call it a manifesto?
Well, Eric, as you know, a manifesto really is a declaration of intent. And I felt that Christians have been too disunified. We are on both sides of the political spectrum, left versus right. But I began to think about that passage in Joshua where the huge angel appears to Joshua. And Joshua wants to know whose side he's on. And essentially the angel says, I'm on my own side. I'm on the Lord's side. And I think that many Christians have let the donkey or the elephant alone define them. And I believe if we had a manifesto based on scripture, it would make easier our decision. Who should we vote for? Whose policies are right and wrong? And then we've been dealing with this race issue. And Eric, blacks have historically voted, as you know, for justice issues. They are biblically based. The widow and the orphan, those kinds of things. What do you do with the poor? And white evangelicals have been looking at what I call righteousness issues, which are also biblically based. But the problem is that Psalm 89, verse 14, does not say righteousness versus justice. It says righteousness and justice are the foundation of God's throne. So I've got millennials who are justice-oriented, but sometimes they're advocating people who are pro-abortion, pro-death, who've got a hypocritical, anti-biblical stand, and there needs to be this clarity of how do we bring righteousness and justice together How do we bring black and white together? How do we bring millennials and the older folk together? And that's why I thought we needed a manifesto. So this year, 2020, 18-year-old and younger, we have a majority-minority population. 18 years and under, blacks, Hispanics, Asians, tie them all together. There are more of those kids, 18 and under, than there are white kids. So in the future, we're going to have to decide, are we going for Jesus? Are we going for biblical revelation? Are we reforming the culture? Or are we going to let these hotheads with no sense of history, perspective, and priorities just kind of diffuse the opportunity for change that we have today?
It's interesting, Bishop, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with Shelby Steele. He wrote a book called White Guilt. And when we talk about white evangelicals, I've been shocked to see how many white evangelicals just go along with whatever they feel they're supposed to do. When Black Lives Matter has the bullhorn, the white evangelicals I'm talking about, some of them haven't even bothered to know what Black Lives Matter stands for, because they think it's this term, Black Lives Matter, and they go, oh, I agree with that. Well, guess what? If you agree with that, you better not get behind the organization called Black Lives Matter, because they're against the family. They're against everything that the black people that I know are for. And I thought to myself, we're not hearing that. And especially in the church, you get some churches that they think that when we're talking about racial justice, we shouldn't be talking about cultural Marxism and so on and so forth. And I'm thinking those are the people that are in the streets doing the damage. Those are not people in the mold of Dr. King. These are people with a radical agenda. And if you care about black lives, you better know that those people are going to harm black lives. And I feel like I'm no longer shy about saying that as a white person, that if you care about black lives, you better understand that virtue signaling and saying that, well, I sort of agree with Black Lives Matter. I'm thinking, folks, if you really care about the urban poor, you better distance yourself from that. And you better have, like, it's going to take some courage, because maybe your friends will look differently at you. But the facts are there. You can look at their website.
You're absolutely right. I did this years ago. Remember when Ferguson jumped off? I happened to be in Ferguson promoting a book I taught with Tony Perkins from Family Research Council about personal faith public policy. This was nearly 6 years ago. And in Ferguson, I heard that among the protesters, as I was sitting and talking to pastors, there were paid people protesting. And the folk in the room with me said, I don't mind protests, but I don't want paid people having a say who are shipped in or bused in from outside the region. Then one of my friends who was a reporter said that as they were on the ground there, they saw this huge drum of oil being rolled down the middle of a street, and then a boom, set on fire, right? And I realized that there were forces trying to create legitimacy for things that should not be part of the conversation. In other words, anarchy was already getting in 6 years ago in Ferguson. And so I've known what you're saying for a long time. So I wish I'd come up with and been wise enough to say, all Black lives matter. Stay with me. And if I would say that instead of Black Lives Matter, I would have said the unborn babies who are aborted disproportionately in our communities who happen to be black, their lives matter. I would have said, yes, the people that die in Chicago on a weekend through violence in the community, their lives matter. Then I would have added to the fact that kids growing up in the ghetto with broken homes and wind up making mistakes, getting to jail, a second chance matters for them. There's all these spectrums. So our people are confused. They think that Black Lives Matter is only about police brutality. But as you alluded to, the organization has a, I'm going to call it LGBT agenda. It's anti-family. It's socialistically driven. And it wants to create a kind of anarchy. And there are a collaboration of what I'm going to call non-biblical worldviews that are fueling it. So what do you do? I thought, again, I wrote this book manifesto to say, folks, be clear. What are you asking for? You're mad about something. I get it. 400 years of problems with Blacks, whites, and others. We can't deny that. But I will say this, and I spoke about this in Las Vegas a few days ago.
That Bishop, I'm going to cut you off because it's a radio program. Hold that thought. When we come back from the break, we are talking to Bishop Harry Jackson. Don't go away. Are you concerned about memory loss for yourself or a loved one? Susan Gibson's mother had dementia. Susan prayed God would show her the solution to memory loss. And after many divine encounters combining faith and her background as a pharmacist, Susan founded Vivalor and created Glory Day Brain Booster. Glory Day is a premium quality, all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. It won the award for most innovative healthcare regimen in 2020. Visit Vivalor.com for testimonials about the life-changing improvements people have experienced. Glory Day is for those with normal memory, mild or severe memory loss. Don't wait until your memory slips. The pathology that leads to memory loss starts 20 years before your first memory loss symptom. Vivalor is V-I-V-O-L-O-R. At Vivalor.com, enter promo code 20 for 20% off. The makers pray that God's glory rests on every pill. Vivalor.com, V-I-V-O-L-O-R.com.
Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with MyPillow, you may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric, okay? Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are. And I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to MyPillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you.
Folks, I'm talking to Bishop Harry Jackson. Bishop, continue with that thought. You were just making a wonderful point.
My wonderful point was that, and I believe it's wonderful, that a unified church has shifted things. Remember, Uncle Tom's Cabin was written by Harriet Beecher Stowe, a wife of a professor at Bowdoin College. And because of it, we had 10% of the population of Maine, for example, who didn't even have any slaves in it, enlist in the Union Army to get rid of slavery. A tenth of those people, all white Christians, died on the battlefield for the change that we've seen happen, freedom from slavery. There was Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain of that era, Civil War. He, a Christian, stood on top of Gettysburg, looked up, and he saw in his writings later, he saw an open vision which told him if he lost the hill, he'd lose the war for against the states, the Civil War. And he had been charged two times by the Confederates at the bottom of the hill that he stood on. This performer professor of religion said, affix bayonets. They're out of ammunition. They have no ability really to beat these guys if they charge again. But he knows he can't lose the hill or they'll lose the Civil War. Slavery becomes permanent. He charges over the hill, and downhill, the Confederates surrender. They give their weapons to the Union, and we win the war. This is a white evangelical person who fights for people of color because there's a unified church. After the Civil War, one of the generals from the same state, Maine, read the book Uncle Tom's Cabin, talks to Congress, says, you got to do something about educational reform. They fight back and forth. Eventually, they said, yes, we're going to give a black university to train these African-Americans. And so Congress said, well, because you fought for it so hard, we're going to name the university after you. So Howard University was named after a white evangelical general who said, I'm going to unify across racial boundaries. And in a manner of speaking, he had a manifesto. He had an agenda that he was promoting to smooth out the racial transitions in his day. And that's how Howard University got started. So I feel like we've got this history. The NAACP, I could go on and on, was not started by black people. Most folk don't know this. It was a majority of white folk, and W.E.B. Du Bois was the communications director. It wasn't until, Eric, 1967, until the first executive director was black of the NAACP. White wow. folk with humanitarian and Christian motivations joined hand with black folk because there were too many people getting lynched. They were straight up saying, we're stopping lynching because our faith and our values won't let us do it. So my thought is with the book Manifesto, why can't we do this again? The first black president, whether you like his policies or not, could not have gotten elected if only black people voted for him, period. So
I mean, I just got to say, how can we forget, you know, people talk about the racism of America. My goodness, we are by far a majority white nation. We elected a black president. I mean, it seems like we have to push those things aside. We have to forget that hundreds of thousands of white boys died in the Civil War. I mean, it seems to me at least a disservice to history and to the lives of people who have sacrificed and sacrificed to pretend that none of that happened.
You're exactly right. And you are a historic writer. I'm looking at your book, Bonhoeffer, over your shoulder. So you understand the power of research and seeing what really went on versus the narrative that a generation later, people want to rebrand things. So I don't know how Uncle Tom became a figure of disdain in the black community, for example, but the real Uncle Tom was a man named Josiah Henson. He was born in Tobacco, Maryland, not far from my church. And that guy's life story is really what Harriet Beecher Stowe based the book on. I talk about this a little bit in the final chapter. of my book. And now we got people who, not knowing their history, don't really recognize that faith and belief, faith and reformation, faith and politics coming together can give a moral backbone to any culture's standards.
There is no doubt about that. Folks, we'll be right back. I'm talking to Bishop Harry Jackson. The new book is called A Manifesto, Christian America's Contract with Minorities. We'll be right back. Folks, this is the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm talking to my friend Bishop Harry Jackson. His new book is called A Manifesto, Christian America's Contract with Minorities. And Bishop, I know because I wrote a book about the great William Wilberforce, that he was a man who, when he became born again, when he became an evangelical, he knew that God was calling him to lead the battle in Parliament, which was 100% white, to end the slave trade. He knew that it would be a big battle. He knew that even though England said we're a Christian nation, they sure were not behaving like any kind of Christian nation. And I'm not just talking about on the slavery issue, on every issue. And he knew that he kind of needed revival as part of that. He needed to wake up the church to be the church and to stand against the wickedness of the slave trade. And of course, there's Wilberforce University named after him. I don't know the story behind that. I don't know if it's as fascinating as Howard University, but it seems to me that anytime anybody loves Jesus, they are against any kind of discrimination, not just racial discrimination, but any kind of discrimination, inequality. And this lie that is out there white evangelicals only care about power or what. These are really vile lies from the pit of hell, because I don't know anybody like that. Everyone I know cares about what God cares about. And again, it seems to me that we're in a tough spot now because of the loud voices on the left pushing things like Black Lives Matter. It takes more courage today to say Black Lives Matter is a Marxist organization that will harm blacks. If you don't wake up to that term has been hijacked, you're helping them to harm blacks in this country in the future. Their policies are going to hurt people. Those are not policies along the lines of Martin Luther King's ideas. These are anti-Christian policies. It really is taking a lot to push back against this media narrative.
Well, it is. You take for example, Terry Crews, the actor. He went on to Don Lemon's show, and he said, we're in danger of black supremacy if we take up the mantra of Black Lives Matter. Now, he's an actor, so he wasn't debating well, and he didn't have a manifesto, the self-serving comment, or anything like this, to say, here's what I believe. Separate out a political agenda from the call against police brutality. So my thought is, as a person of faith, we've got, as you look at my five fingers, maybe five initial issues that have to do with major race reformation or problems with the poor in America. Let's separate out this discussion, set some goals, and we can make some changes. We have in the White House now an action-oriented, courageous person who will take action. We have another group that I'm concerned about. I don't want to get too deeply political, but I do want to say this affects politics. If we maintain the Democratic Party's stranglehold on minorities, then we're sort of like in an adulterous relationship, Eric. What do I mean by that? We get a call or a knock at our door at midnight. We have somebody who wants what they want, and I'm a bishop. I'm just saying this happens in the real world. There's someone who wants what they want sexually, emotionally, whatever. But when it comes to actually getting married, taking me out for a date, giving me a dinner, giving me flowers, if I'm in an adulterous relationship that's secret, I don't get any of the benefits of the covenant of marriage. We have this situation now. I need somebody to blow up the stranglehold by the Democratic Party against the community. And then let's have some people bid on those. I have nine things with the word empowered, but maybe there are three or four things that the church decides out of that nine they're going to go for. Let's work on education and really get an even playing field. Let's work on home ownership and really make sure that generational wealth is passed on in minority families. Or let's work on creating Black businesses that give jobs and destiny. Let's get specific. But you need the voting block of that church once again. That changed our nation.
I know for a fact that most people do not know that the Republican Party was started as the anti-slavery party. That's why Abraham Lincoln was the first president. I've only learned this recently, and it's embarrassing to realize that the Democrats were viciously racist. This was simply a fact through history, and that even in the 60s, that, oh yes, it was a Democratic president, LBJ, but the entirety of Congress that voted for the Civil Rights Act was the Republicans, not the Democrats. And Byrd, who was a mentor of Joe Biden, filibustered against the Civil Rights Act. And I thought, I never heard this in school. I never heard this on TV. How have I been fooled into thinking that the Democratic Party had been standing up for Black people? How even I have been fooled into that? And I think we're at a season right now where people are waking up and beginning to see that we have been sold a bill of goods. The Democratic leadership has had a stranglehold on many of our big cities, and they have harmed the Black community. They have instituted policies that have harmed Black families. And before we go to break, I mean, I guess I just want to say this quickly, that, you know, what you said, they have taken the Black vote 100% for granted. If they had succeeded in lifting up Black communities, I would say, that's fine. You got to give them that. We're going to go to break. Final segment with my friend, Pastor Harry Jackson. A Manifesto is the title of the book. We'll be right back with Bishop Harry Jackson. Stick around. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody ringing the bell. Do me a favor. Open the door. And let them in. Hey there, folks. Bishop Harry Jackson is my guest. He has a new book out. A Manifesto is the title, A Christian America's Contract with Minorities. Bishop Jackson, I just love this idea that that you put forward. So what have we missed in our conversation? I don't want to miss anything.
Well, the overview is very simplistic, and I need to start with this. And that is, imagine that you're in a rowboat, and you're trying to get from one side of a river to another. In order to move forward, you can't just pull one row. You got to pull both rows, and you got to progress forward with this intense focus. And I think heretofore, Christians have not been registered to vote, so they are not pulling the political oar. And then others aren't even praying. They're feeling like, oh, it's the end time and evil is going to get worse, and therefore I'm checking out early until my ticket on the rapture comes. I'm just going to stay here. So I need that other oar of prayer. And so if you get involved in this area, many people say, oh, you're not spiritual. But the reality is some of us who are reading things like A Manifesto are learning to pull both oars. The activism, being registered this year for the first time, I got on I was supposed to appear in the live meeting with the party of my choice and to be on several committees and to be engaged. So what minorities and Christians have in common is their lack of registering to vote, their lack of knowledge about the issues, like reading a book like Manifesto, their lack of genuinely praying, pulling that oar, and then acting. So if you're a Democrat in name only, and you're sitting around, you're just going to vote what's on the D category, and you don't tell people, you can't take the Bible out of consideration in your platform. You can't make all these decisions and not let me be involved. So my final word in this segment really is there has to be spiritual and natural engagement. Most groups I see, they're top heavy on one side or the other. But right now, I'll go back to Wilberforce, as you talked about. If he did not have biblical thinking with prayer, along with sustained, patient, strategic action, that's engagement, he never would have seen slavery defeated. We're not going to advance Christ's agenda in this generation unless we pull this boat forward with both oars.
I love it. And people have to educate themselves. I had no idea of what I was just saying before. And the most cynical thing that I heard was that Lyndon Johnson said, if we pass the Civil Rights Act, we'll have those N-words voting for us for 200 years. And I got to tell you, that is the darkest, most cynical political thing. And I want to say to my black friends, don't be a sucker. This has been 50 years of getting nothing. And I hope people will buy this book, A Manifesto, because this is ultimately about Jesus. It's not about politics. Bishop Jackson, you just blessed me. Thank you for being my guest. Thank you so much.